Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Smith and Jones. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Subscribe to Smith and Jones wherever you get your podcast, Google, Apple, Spotify, or otherwise. Download, subscribe, rate, and review, and folks, share it as well. In fact, I'll probably say this a couple of times over the course of the next hour, so I think you're going to want to share this episode because we've got one of the all-time Raptor fan favorites coming up in a few moments' time. Jonesy, we are going to be joined by Muggsy Bogues. Anytime you ask Raptors to kind of go into the memory banks, give me like, you know, think outside of like the top five or whatever, you know, like don't give me Vince even, who we're going to talk a lot about. Don't give me, DeMar DeRozan or Kyle Lowry or Chris Bosh or whatever. Give me like, you know, who stands out right away. I guarantee you one of these two names is going to come out of your mouth. Jerome Williams or Muggsy Bogues. I don't care if you're 20 years old or 70 years old. People remember and loved Muggsy Bogues for his brief time as a Toronto Raptor, and he's going to join us in a couple of moments' time. And why? Well, I just hinted at it in mentioning Vince Carter. We found out earlier in the week that Vince Carter and Chauncey Billups, who had a brief cup of coffee with the Raptors as well, will be headed to the Basketball Hall of Fame. They are the class of 2024. So again, Chauncey Billups and Vince Carter headed to the Hall of Fame. And Vince had an incredible run with the Raptors. I'm here to say to anybody listening, and I often say, I don't want to hear the hate. Don't tweet me, don't at me, whatever. You can at me. You can tweet me if you want. And I'll tell you, you are flat out wrong if you don't think that Vince Carter is a Hall of Famer. His time in Toronto and what he did for the growth of basketball in Canada alone might put him in the Hall of Fame. Remember, it is the Basketball Hall of Fame, not just the NBA Hall of Fame. So his impact as a pioneer of the sport in this country, let alone what he did stateside and with the Olympics and everything else, putting all of that, then we talk about a 20-plus year career and the longevity and where he stands among the all-time great scorers and the all-star nods and everything else. Vince Carter is 100% a bona fide and justified Hall of Fame player, period. If you don't agree, you're wrong. Flat out wrong. Jonesy, I'm on my soapbox here. You haven't even said a word, and I apologize. I've now gone on too long because we want to bring in our guest as we welcome into the conversation the aforementioned longtime NBA vet and fan favorite, especially here in Toronto as well, of course in Charlotte too, Muggsy Bogues.
Muggs, one of your old teammates is going into the Hall of Fame. And it's significant in Toronto here because, Vince was must-see TV. You were here. You had been in the league and played with a lot of terrific players. When did you know that this was going to be, this kid was going to be something special? When did you have an inkling that there's something going on here that's a little bit different than normal?
Well, I mean, his rookie year. I mean, I wasn't on the team at that time, but, you know, just seeing Vince highlights and seeing Vince when he was at Carolina, by following the ACC quite a bit, you know, just seeing his skill set, what he was able to do, and then when he was able to translate that into the NBA in his first year, having so many, you know, unbelievable highlighted moments and starting to, gain that half man, half amazing type of nickname that he was developing. I mean, you knew he was going to be something special. But seeing it when I got there with him and seeing it on a day-to-day basis, you can see, you know, how much he was really, you know, in tune with wanting to be one of the best at it.
Muggsy, what was the difference then that you were able to see firsthand when you ultimately did join the Raptors and you were his teammate, from playing against him and seeing him on TV to seeing him in person, in practice, in games every day?
Well, his first year, he was young. He was a rookie. That rookie year, everything is new. The year I got with him, that was his second year, and that was where he was, receptive of just wanting to learn and just wanting to what it all took on and off the court to be the best, version of himself. And he had a lot of support in that area. You know, a lot of veterans that were surrounding myself, Oakley, Antonio Davis, Dell Curry, D. Brown, those guys. And, and Kevin Willis. You know, we wanted to, with the young and the new and the old mixture in, we wanted to, we felt like we complemented each other. And with Vince and Tracy being at, being the youngest, and being the franchise of, you know, the face of the franchise, we just wanted to support him and just try to guide him in the best way, you know, we knew how. And he was very receptive to it. He was open to whatever we had to bring to the table on and off the court. And you can see how much he, you know, he wanted to become that superstar. And he was humble at it. He was very selfless. So it was a beauty to watch, you know, seeing the, you know, him becoming now, you know, a Hall of Famer.
Muggs, everybody looks at Vince's high wire act, his athleticism, the gifts that he was given. How much is his work ethic underplayed in all of this? As you said, you know, you've mentioned a number of times, him being receptive to coaching, wanting to be good. You saw it every day. How much do you think his work ethic is underplayed? And maybe people don't give Vince enough credit for the time, the effort, the work he put in.
Yeah, they don't give him. They don't give him that much credit. They don't see the behind the scenes. You know, Vince worked out quite a bit on his game, his body, and all of that. You know, and he really took it very serious on, especially during the off season. You look at a lot of the kids that's now that's in the NBA, especially the Canadian kids that we, you know, we didn't have many at all during his time in the league. And now you have, you know, quite a few, you know, Canadians that thought about the game that will start, you know, pursuing the game mainly because of Vince. Vince really, you know, his leadership was, you know, was quiet in a way where, you know, it's not vocal. It was always led by example. He took that, you know, to wherever he went, you know, New Jersey, even though J.K. was the vocal guy, but eventually it led in many ways and different ways, and people never give him credit for that.
Muggsy, to that point, you know, listen, it's all about giving Vince his flowers. This is an absolutely deserved honor for him, and you know, we're thrilled for him, let alone so many others are. But his growth and maturation as a person and as a player, sometimes I know it can be hard to talk about yourself, but how much pride do you personally take in that, let alone so many other of the vets that were on that team that really were mentors for this guy at such a young age and at such a key age and time for him to learn what it was like to be a professional, let alone to just have the skill and the talent that he did?
Well, I take no credit. You know, I give it all the credit to Vince because that's who he was. You know, I guess that's the values that he was instilled as a kid, you know, the morals and the principles that his mom and them, you know, instilled in him. And, you know, he was just able to, you know, he always been a humble kid. He never been, you know, arrogant, egotistic, even though his skill set, you know, can call for that, you know, from a player. Vince just was easy going. He was just so easy going. And he made it that way. And probably that's why people perceive him in the way that they do at times, because he's just that easy going. You know, he's not combative, not, you know, not confrontational at all. The kid played 21 years in the league. I mean, that's how much he was allowed to let his ego, you know, continue to, you know, to keep growing, keep, you know, being, you know, submissive. You know, a lot of superstars like that, not able to, you know, transcend from a starter to now one of the mentor players coming off the bench and so forth. But that's just who he was, and that's why he wanted, that's why he played for so long, because he loved the game. He loved what he was doing. He loved how he was impacting the younger players, how he was giving back, because he remembered how we gave back to him. And that's what, you know, that's what you love about a superstar like him. You know, I'm just grateful to be able to be around it as short live it was, you know, the year and a half that we had together. That was special moments. And, you know, we have a bond that lasts for a lifetime. You know, I spoke to him yesterday, and that's how crazy it is. It's just, you know, just great to see that he's getting his flowers that he's definitely deserved.
Muggsy, you talk about Vince being an example. And listen, I'm of a different generation. I just see the game changing, or personalities of the game or in the game changing, because of the way the game is right now, the way it's played, the money, all of the other variables, are we going to see people like Vince or that kind of old guard going forward that come in? You know, they respect the vets. They learn from the vets. They're willing to listen to them, you know, giving back. And it's not all about numbers, because we know with all of you guys and that team that was here that really kind of helped push things forward with the Raptors, it was about team and it was about winning. And somehow I'm there's part of me that isn't fully confident that that is present right now in the NBA. I'm hoping it'll come back, but there's more of an individualistic feel to the game nowadays, which didn't happen. And if it did happen in Vince's generation, the vets were able to kind of tune it up and fix it a bit.
Yeah, I guess it all depends on, you know, certain organizations. You know, certain organizations just don't allow that to creep in. You know, they stay steady to who they are, what their culture, you know, brings. You know, you look like a Miami, you look like, you know, the Bostons, you know, the Lakers, even though they go through it. But still, you look at some of those franchises, they allow that culture to stay the same. When you have a lot of young players that hasn't had that veteran around them, they just don't know how. And it takes that, you know, that those individuals that to give those guys, you know, that type of knowledge and information. Then, you know, the younger guys got to be just like a Vince. They got to be receptive and be willing to accept that type of information that's coming their way. A lot of teams have young superstars that, you know, do understand that. You know, you look at a Tyler Halliburton, you know, in Indiana. I think he really, you know, gets it. You look at a little Anthony Edwards, you know, I think he gets it, you know, in terms of, you know, how important of to continue to play on a day-to-day basis. And that low management is something that, you know, we're trying to get away from. So those guys, they understand, as long as you can have, you know, those type of superstars that understand it, you know, they will keep the torch going. And hopefully the game will continue to grow the way everybody envisioned it to. But, you know, we got a long way to go. But I think we still want to, you know, we still got some very prominent people that are still in the lead, the LeBron James, the Stephen Currys, and the Giannis's and the Jokers of the world. Tatum and Brown is definitely understanding. And then I like the kid Barnes as well, you know, that fan Toronto. So hopefully that everybody can continue to grow and continue to be receptive and get their programs to where, you know, that young player now know who to turn to where they're not lost, you know, on or off the court.
You know, Muggsy, jumping back to – those are all great points, and I love the list of guys that you just gave out. But jumping back to Vince specifically, one of the things that stood out for me, and I think I would say this about DeMar DeRozan too, and I'm sure this can be said about a lot of the great players in the game, but what stood out to me with Vince, just even from a broadcaster side of things, is that when he first burst onto the scene with all the talent that he had, he seemed to come back each year with something different. He improved as a rebounder. He improved as a distributor, as a passer. He improved as a three-point shooter. And then, as you talked about earlier, he even had to morph the type of player that he was to have the longevity that he did, to adjust to being a guy that was maybe a second, third option, to adjust to being a sixth man, a role player, a depth guy, etc., and a guy that could defend at times as well. Like, there were so many different stages of his development and what he was bringing, what he had in his bag to any game. And that, to me, really stood out about his career arc overall as well.
And it goes to show, you know, what he was doing in the summertime. You know, always continue working on his game. You know, Vince was, again, you know, his shot was always there. People don't realize how good a shooter he was, even though he had the jumping ability and all of that. But his jump shot really was so accurate with separating him, allowing him to create that space. He worked on his ball handling, as you alluded to, his passing. You know, every summer he always came back with something that he wanted to improve at. His post-up game, his fadeaway. I mean, he worked on a lot of things in the offseason to improve, because that's the player that he was and that's the player he wanted to be. You know, and that's one of the reasons why he's going to the Hall of Fame, because of all those things that he brought to the table. And it all goes back to the work ethic that, you know, that he was, you know, that he instilled. And the people didn't see that, You know, we behind the folks that knew him, understood the work that put that he put in to be the player that he was. And Vince, as people realize, he wasn't injury prone. You know, Vince, you know, he was always, you know, laced up, you know, played, as, you know, 82 as many games that, you know, that he, you know, his body allowed. And and mostly of it, it was, you know, 75% of the games. And those are the things that, you know, you remember most about him as well, along with the longevity career.
Muggsy, last one for me. Listen, we're in April now, and I know this is the best time of the year if you're an NBA fan because, you know, the tournament is one thing, but I always say there's nothing like grown men playing for a ring. You know, the money's out the window. We're playing for something else now. What is it that you're most looking forward to in the playoffs this year? I look at the West right now, and the play-in tournament itself is like March Madness on steroids with, you know, LeBron right now, you know, as we record this, LeBron having to play Steph, and maybe they have to get through a Durant or a Luka or somebody like that just to get a seven-game series. What are you looking forward to most in the playoffs coming up now, Muggsy?
As you just mentioned, the matchups. I mean, that's what it's going to come down to. You know, great teams going to be playing great teams, and great teams, I mean, and not by just the record, by the namesake. But, you know, Denver has been, you know, consistent throughout the entire year. The Clippers been up and down. So you thought that OKC has really, you know, been shocking out there as well. Dallas, you know, you never know. But again, Golden State, you can't never count them out. Lakers, you can't never count them out. Phoenix, you know, who knows what's going to happen with those guys if they can continue to stay healthy. But it is, it's, you know, it's the wild, wild west, as you said, and it's going to be a shootout. But I'm looking forward to all those matchups. I'm looking forward to the Eastern matchup as well, you know, with Joel Embiid coming back. And, you know, with Milwaukee, you know, they're going through their situation. And so it's going to be interesting. Boston been steady and consistent. And Miami, who knows what's going to happen with them. And, you know, so let's see. And I'm interested to see how it all turn out. You know, Toronto's still fighting. You know, so we all going to see how it all unfolds and see who make that play-in game.
Muggsy, last one for me. And I'm jumping back to Vince. But I'm going to be asking this question of a lot of people, and Jonesy and I have had this. It's not even a debate. We both agree it should happen. But would you be hanging number 15 in the rafters in Toronto?
Oh, without a doubt. No doubt, without. Yes, yes, you got to be. He got to be the first one to be hung, you know, because he's the first one, you know, the first Hall of Famer, you know, that came through the franchise. I know that he didn't win a championship while he was there, but you know, he was the one, the face that everybody knew about Toronto and where they were on the map. So I think he definitely should be the first one to be hung. And, you know, right after that, of course, I'm sure Kyle Lowry should be up there. But I wouldn't be mad if they put Damon Stoudemire up there.
Muggs, that was awesome, man. We appreciate this. We appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Appreciate you guys.
That was former Toronto Raptor, one of the all-time fan favorites and certainly one of the all-time greats in Charlotte Hornets history, NBA veteran guard Muggsy Bogues. And great to reminisce with Muggsy, Jonesy, about Vince Carter. Again, Vince Carter and Chauncey Billups heading to the Naismith Hall of Fame. When we come back, we will continue talking about Vince and his legacy with the Raptors as we will be joined by one of our colleagues from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca, Michael Grange. But before we get to that, I want to remind you to subscribe to Smith & Jones. If you aren't already subscribed, download, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. And hey, share as well. I think you're going to want to share this episode. And again, when we come back, we will chat with Michael Grange on Smith & Jones. Welcome back to Smith & Jones. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. We continue talking about Vince Carter heading to the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame as we bring into the conversation our colleague from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca, Michael Grange. Michael, I was reading through a thread of tweets that you had, or we don't even call them tweets anymore, posts on X, where you were just kind of giving a chronology of and a history lesson of Vince Carter, his time in Toronto, and his impact on Canadian basketball. And for a lot of people, like myself, I'm not going to lie, I've said this before, the impact that Vince has had, I think, is immeasurable. I've even talked about whether, you know, if Vancouver had Vince, would that have helped the Grizzlies and whatnot? But for those that didn't read what you wrote, maybe you could articulate to the audience right now how you two, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but if I'm correct in assessing it this way, you two believe that Vince is a very important part of history and played a very important and key role in the growth of basketball, but let's not just assume that he's the only guy and the only reason and the only savior that the Raptors had. And there's many reasons for your stance on that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair way to characterize it. And I think off the top, you know, congratulations to Vince Carter. And, you know, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, we were all around, luckily to be around for that, those kind of three ascendant years, I guess, when, you know, look, even in all the years since, like, you just do not experience kind of things like that very often, just a star being born before your eyes. So it was really special time in the city's history and the Raptors' history and Canadian basketball history. But, you know, I just felt, and I have always felt a little bit, and I've said this in regard to Steve Nash as well, I've always felt it's a little bit, but as it relates to the Raptors specifically, it's a little bit much to say that, you know, the Raptors only survived because of Vince Carter, or he saved the Raptors, or, you know, he saved basketball in Canada. You know, and on a very technical but very important issue, you know, it's important to understand that the Leafs bought the Raptors and the what was in the Air Canada Center in February of 98, which was before Vince's rookie season. And that was the single most important development in the history of the Raptors. I'm not saying they would or wouldn't have survived as an independent franchise in their own building, going head-to-head in the winter months against the Leafs, which were, you know, the Goliath brand at the time, and probably would have had to go and build their own building, or were going to build their own building. It just would have been a lot harder. And but when the Leafs bought the Raptors, they all moved in under one roof. And at the time, the Leafs were kind of like the big brother, right? And all, and if you were a corporate suite holder and you wanted to buy a suite at the Air Canada Center or a season ticket package at the Air Canada Center, I guess really the corporate suites was the big one. You couldn't just say, well, look, I don't care about the Raptors. I just want, you know, I just want the suite for, or the season ticket license for the Raptors or the Leafs, one of. You had to buy it for the building. And I think that was like a huge, huge thing in securing the financial base for the Raptors. And I think the synergies that MLSC provided as sort of the home for both teams initially, I think, was a much more beneficial arrangement for the Raptors. And what I did say in that thread too is I had conversations with Larry Tinebaum. I had conversations at the time with Richard Petty, and, you know, among others, who recognized that as the city was changing, as the country was changing, as basketball was growing, there could be and probably would be a day when, you know, the NBA and the Raptors would be, in some ways, the revenue driver for MLSC. It seemed incomprehensible at the time. But here we are, and we all know what TV revenues and media broadcast media revenues are headed. And you know, the NBA is just a bigger business than the NHL and is continuing to grow. And, you know, those two companies, franchises, are on very equal footing at MLSC. And, you know, you could argue probably, I don't see the books, but you could maybe do a case that the Raptors are the single largest revenue driver at that company. Anyway, long answer, but the point is, you know, for everything Vince did, you know, the proper way to appreciate him, I think, in the context people are talking about, is he was proof of concept. So very, very early days when there were a lot of doubters about what an NBA team could do in Toronto, how it, you know, the fact that it struggled and eventually failed in Vancouver, which is an entirely different story. you know, there was a lot of resistance and some roadblocks and, you know, from all kinds of, in all kinds of ways about the NBA in Canada and the Raptors in Toronto. But when Vince got in that building and he christened it with that alley-oop dunk from Charles Oakley, if I got my facts right, and, you know, his star exploded, it proved that, you know, basketball was here to stay. It proved what it could all mean. It inspired a generation of people. But, you know, that he had the opportunity to do that on that platform, I think, was already locked in. The Raptors were never going to go anywhere. And, you know, when I talk about the growth of basketball and where we are now, and Jonesy and Eric, you can appreciate this, you know, with your own boy, right? It's, you know, it's there was a huge base of interest anyway. That's why they brought a team here. There was, you know, I think most significantly, a generation of parents who grew up playing in this city and in this country in kind of an ad hoc way, right? It just didn't have the horsepower that it did. And you know, and you talk about Roland Barrett, you can talk about yourself, Jonesy, you can talk about so many. You go through, I always go through the parent, the national teams, you know, the last decade or so at the junior national, U16, U18 level. And, you know, I'd recognize almost every parent, it felt like. It was always the son of somebody or the daughter of somebody. And, you know, that's, I think, the number one thing that happened is Vince helped create an incredible demand for basketball, but there was an incredible army of parents who were trying to build an infrastructure for the sport from scratch that didn't really exist when they were growing up.
Well,
that was all in one
Michael,
thread.
Listen.
That was impressive,
no,
Michael.
No,
that was impressive,
you gave,
man.
You, and if we weren't limited time for radio, this should be the 1 hour radio special only, because, you know, I'll go back even a little bit further, and he's very polarizing, but Isaiah Thomas had some great ideas. He literally went door to door to capture the next generation of fan. He knew he wasn't beating the Leafs, and, you know, game started at 7 o'clock. All the weekend games started at noon, so you could bring your kids. 7 o'clock game, you could have your kid home by 9:15 if you lived in the, you know, close to the downtown, or sorry, 10:15, but if you lived close to the downtown GTA area. And the building, the old postal building that is Air Canada Center, and now Scotiabank Arena, was going to be a basketball only facility, which is why our media room is cut off the way it is, because it had to make way for the Leafs dressing room when the Leafs bought in. And I think, you know, there were some ideas there. And yeah, the Leafs coming in and purchasing the Raptors, as you say, the big brother, was huge. But I think they saw the writing on the wall too. And Michael, I'll say this, I am from that generation. I had some of the deans of the sports broadcasting business ask me if it would last in Toronto. And I just knew it would. I mean, I talked to people like Brian Heaney, who was a successful coach and NBA player himself. And we kind of looked at each other and laughed, thinking that people think this is going to fail. There's no chance. I mean, I look at the Blue Jays. It took the Blue Jays 9 years to win an AL East championship with the mighty Red Sox and the dominant Yankees. And I said, people will come and watch Ewing, Jordan, you know, Gary Payton, they'll come and watch the other team while you build your team in the back. And the money stuff aside, you know, the drafting of Vince Carter and, you know, catapulting it in that sense. And you're right. There was a generation of people like me that finally said, see, we told you guys, and Eric can vouch for this. We were doing a simulcast show on the air in conjunction with MLSE on Thursday nights. And I said, at some point, basketball will be as big, if not bigger, than hockey in this city. And mm-hmm. I was getting, you know, what was akin to death threats. And you're right, Michael. You look at the generation now, and Vince is, I agree with you, he didn't save the Raptors, but man, he was a big part of what transpired. And I, you know, credit to Vince, you know, credit to the perfect storm around him with veterans like Oakley and Willis and D. Brown and Muggsy and Del Curry and people that knew how good he and Tracy could be and helped foster that. So, you know, there's, you're so right with that though, Michael. There was a lot going on, And you know, Vince deserves a whole bunch of congratulations. I mean, you look at current NBA players, Kevin Durant talking about his favorite team was the Raptors. Well, why? Because NBC was changing their national schedule to get Vince on TV in the U.S. Vince led the All-Star game in voting. Before, you could just click on the internet. You had to punch a box and stuff it in the ballot box. Vince led the NBA from what people thought, saw as an outpost, NBA people in Toronto. And it really is remarkable, and hats off to Vince and everybody that had anything to do with it. And you know, Vince is the Hall of Famer. He was the one on the court, but everything just aligned perfectly for it to go that way. So, Michael, here's my question to you after kind of, you know, recanting your thread. What do you say to those fans that still are shaking their fist at Vince saying, you know, you left us? I mean, hopefully some of them have grown to the point where they understand that pro sports is pro sports and it never ends the way you want it to. Very few guys are Kobe Bryant or Joe Dumars or, you know, play their entire career with one team. What do you say to those fans that are still taking the hard line on Vince?
I've got a 30-minute documentary somewhere on YouTube and about a 7,000-word magazine article somewhere out there on the internet that basically explains, the nuts and bolts of that whole thing. But I think you're right, Jonesy, is that in the view through the context of today's lens, 20 years later, all that transpired makes a lot – it's all more understandable. And, and I think – but, you know, when you really get to the crux of the matter, as electric as it was those first couple of 2-3 years, it was an organization that was very – I would use the word immature. Like, it was not, really sophisticated or attuned to how to manage what they had in front of them. And I think Vince got to the point, I know that Vince got to the point that, he felt like it wasn't the best place for him to thrive in his career. And I think when you look at some of the things that went down, on the last 2-3 years when he was there, he was probably right. And it's very unfortunate that's the way it went. But I think in a different set of circumstances, I think if all those circumstances had been in play today or in the last 5-6 years, Vince Tracy wouldn't have left. Vince wouldn't have left. The CBA would have made that possible, by the way. T-Mac would have stayed and he would have extended. He would have got the money. And those circumstances weren't in play then. And, so you had a young guy, incredibly talented, who was eligible to be a free agent at a younger stage in his career. And there was no power that the Raptors had to keep him. So he chose to go home. And, and I think things sort of spiraled a little bit after that. Vince didn't help himself in some ways. And I think, again, in a modern context, there would have been that whole situation with his injuries and some of his how he managed himself publicly, I think would have all been done with a little bit more, I don't want to say professionalism, but a little bit more expertise. And, so I just think the whole story would have looked different had it transpired later than it did. It's not to excuse some of the stuff that went down, but I think, we've become very accustomed, and I think it's understandable that, these athletes get drafted to a place and, they have, when they're given the opportunity to kind of seek what's best for them in their brief professional careers, although Vince's career ended up being pretty long, if the situation, I would say I just think that the Raptors at that time let Vince down as much as Vince let them down. And, there's still, so as a fan, I think if you're of the mind that, Vince owed you your entire career, his entire career, the entire prime of his career, I think it's fair to say that the organizations have to step up and make it that, a given franchise is the place, the best place for them. And, you know, I don't know if that was the case in 2004, 2005 for Vince.
You know, Michael, you referenced earlier my son, and I don't often talk about him necessarily on here, but I'll say as a 14-year-old kid, and there's no denying that he's influenced by dad, even if I don't ever say anything directly, you know, but just by through osmosis. I'm sure he picks things up and sees things and whatever else, but I've never forced the Raptors on him. I've never forced basketball on him. It's like he's found sports. He's playing sports that I'm not even interested in and following teams that I don't like and whatnot. But yet hanging in his closet is a Vince Carter jersey. And if you ask him, and again, he's 14. If you ask him who's the greatest Raptor of all time, he'll kind of him and haw and say, well, is it Kyle Lowry? Is it Vince Carter? I don't know. Like he knows as much about Vince as somebody that would have grown up actually having watched Vince. And again, this dude's only 14 years old. That to me says something about the impact of the generation. Yeah, it also says something about social media and YouTube and young kids and young people that are watching and hopefully respecting and appreciating and following history. But it also says something to me about the impact that this guy has on a generation that didn't even grow up watching him, especially in this area, in Southern Ontario, and with Raptor fans in and across Canada as well. Having said that, Michael, do the Raptors, do you think, will they, and maybe I could even ask you in your own opinion, should they follow a path perhaps similar to, if I can use the example of the Toronto Blue Jays? The Jays have a level of excellence, but they also do have a couple of retired jerseys. Now, one guy, for many reasons that we don't necessarily want to delve into right now, Roberto Alomar's number 12, we don't really even think about or talk about anymore, and he did that to himself with a lot of horrendous decisions in his personal, let alone professional life. But Doc Holliday's 32 is there. You think the Raptors get to a point where if we're going to retire jersey numbers, it should be with guys that are going into the Hall of Fame? And it doesn't matter. It's different in basketball than it is in baseball. You're not going in with a hat or a jersey on. But to know that you have one of the all-time greats, one of the top historic, you know, scorers in the history of the game, a guy that helped, you know, put your franchise on the map, as we've just been discussing, is that alone enough reason for the Raptors in their 30th anniversary season, even next year, to maybe put number 15 up in the rafters?
I mean, they've got to recognize him. It would be foolish, and you know, there's no good reason not to recognize him. And, you know, we've seen it across sports where, you know, as you guys made the point off the top, like, you know, there's a breakup, so to speak, and it's kind of messy at the time. And then over time, you know, it people understand, and time heals all type thing. So, you know, I guess the real question is, how to recognize and to what degree and in what order. And you know, I think if you're looking at strictly what, you know, who meant more to the Raptors, I think you probably have to go with Kyle Lowry. And then you kind of get it into order. Should it be Kyle first? Should it be Vince first? And then what is the standard? And where does, you know, guys like Bosch or DeMar, where do they fit? So it's all, you know, it's all kind of complicated, but, you know, I don't mind the idea of, you know, recognizing, like, as a level of excellence type thing for guys who were all NBA while a Raptor, or, you know, these kinds of things. And then maybe having a separate honor for retired numbers, maybe that might be a way to go. But, you know, I get a headache when I start thinking about it too much.
It's difficult, and you know, the Raptors don't have the depth of, you know, history. They don't have the you know, they don't have the same tradition, lore, you know, compared to, you know, a franchise like the Lakers or the Celtics. It was interesting to see Orlando retire their first number, or retire Shaq's jersey in that sense, and it's something that really needs some thought. But I would say, and again, having been around since the beginning, I would say, you know, going back to what you talked about, Michael, I don't know if he saved the day, but he was a big part of it. And what was going on with Vince on the court, and we know how TV numbers and things like that drive the bus, he was a big part of it. So if there's anybody I think it's Vince. I think it's Vince first. And people have asked me this before. Vince, or if you were retiring a number first, who would it be, Vince or Kyle? And I think Kyle said something about that the day of the parade when he wore Damon Stoudemire's jersey. Just kind of, hey, these people came before me and made it possible. So, I mean, my thing would be Vince. Although I think there are so many great Raptors. Even you look at the guys who played with Vince that were on that team that maybe should be honored in some way, and their popularity continues to be sky high in Toronto here.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's what's interesting too, because as I was going in my head, like, you know, think about all the Leafs jerseys, not all, like, haven't retired all that many, but, and even when it comes to franchises like the Celtics and the Lakers and so on and all that, what's different a little bit about the Raptors is their entire NBA existence has been in at least a 20, I mean, most of it had been in a 30-team league. I'm trying to remember when Minnesota came, like, who came, if any teams came after them. I don't think so, right? Anyway, my point being is, you know, in a 30-team universe, it's really hard to have, you know, players and teams that achieve these, like, Hall of Fame, legendary type levels of excellence. So, you know, I think, you know, so I think it's important to look at your standards and I do, I think Eric's, the more I think about it, I think Eric's suggestion where there's a level of excellence and then there are retired jerseys, you know, let alone statues. Like, I think that's an interesting thing because, you know, Chris Bosh was an all NBA player here and he brought a help, you know, he had his own era where things were looking pretty good when he was here. And Vince, obviously, you know, Damon, rookie of the year, right? And you know, kind of had his own special moments. And not all these players left on the best terms when they were there, but obviously things have kind of, you know, they're all very welcome when they come back. And I think, you know, it's a good thing for a team to celebrate its history. And, you know, so maybe it's there's different tiers of the way you celebrate them. And but I, you know, retiring a jersey is the highest possible honor, I guess, in a professional sport. And you know, you got to. I think it's good if you're very selective on that. And you know, if it's, it doesn't have to be everybody.
Michael, I'm looking for a segue here. I don't know if I can find a clean one, but I'll try to make one up anyway.
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt real quick, just because. As I'm saying all those things, like DeMar DeRozan, in my mind, deserves to have some honor here as a Raptor. And so, anyway, go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
No. And listen. And the debate will rage. I don't know where you stand on it, where Jonesy stands on it, but the debate will rage. There was a guy here for one season, but for one season, they don't win that championship without him. I'm not saying you retire his number, but would you put him up on a level of excellence? I would say you probably would. And obviously I'm talking 100%. About Kawhi Leonard. So, I mean, there's lots of debates that will rage on forever. But this is how I could segue into. We've got a couple of minutes left here with you, and we appreciate your time. Whether folks are listening live or whether it's you know, a few days later on the podcast, either way, go to sportsnet.ca, a fabulous, well-written and extremely long, in-depth article written on the MLSE ownership situation, and also with a new CEO coming in Keith Pelley as president and CEO of Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, and the impact that he could have on decisions like what we're talking about in terms of what the Raptors do next year in their 30th anniversary season, how they navigate through decisions like this that are going to be, you know, part of their history and whatnot. And Michael, I don't know where the jumping off point is. I don't even know what the best question is outside of, what do you think will be the most important issue and perhaps the biggest impact that Keith Pelley has on the Raptors specifically in the short and even long term?
You know, I think it's going to be determining. That's a great question. You know, I think determining what the short-term direction of its of the team is going to be, and I think a little bit longer term than that is, you know, will Masai Ujiri be, you know, is he going to kind of be here to see it all through? Which isn't, don't get me wrong, I'm not suggesting that there's going to be an instant change. But, you know, the thrust of that article was that the ownership is likely headed for a change. You know, could be a couple of years out with Larry Tannenbaum. And, you know, that could set in motion a number of things. But I think when you look at where the team is now and, you know, is he, would Keith Pelley sign off on, you know, a really committed rebuild? Or, you know, would he have more of an appetite to saying, look, let's try and bounce back quickly and you know, let's get on Scotty Barnes' timeline as quickly as he can. I guess that's probably going to be the most important short-term decision he'll have.
Michael, that was awesome, man. I appreciate it.
Okay.
We appreciate it.
Thanks, Michael.
That was our colleague from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca, Michael Grange-Jones. We've had a great time over the course of this episode, this show, talking about Vince Carter quite a bit. Yeah, we got some thoughts from Grange right there about MLSE and with Keith Pelley's new gig and whatnot. But really, this show was primarily about Vince Carter heading to the Hall of Fame, hearing from Muggsy Bogues, hearing from Grange. Any final thoughts or any memories or anything that stands out for you, Jonesy, when you think back to VC and his years as a Raptor?
I just think the honor, the Hall of Fame honor, is well deserved, and I will never forget interviewing Vince, being the last person to interview Vince before he took the court at what was called the Arena in Oakland for that slam dunk contest in 2000. You know, working for national TV, did the interview with Vince in the bowels of the arena underneath, and he was, as Muggsy talked about, he was so humble that he couldn't see that this event had his name written all over it. And there were some pretty good dunkers in that. And I remember putting the mic down and saying, Vince, this is you. This is what you do. And he kind of said, well, I don't know, Jonesy. And it was like he left me and walked into the arena when the lights opened and the lights hit him and the stardom just burst from his body. And he had that dunk contest won in the first two or three dunks. And I was sitting with the late Paul Silas, head coach, former NBA head coach. And we looked at each other after the first dunk, and it was, I mean, people are still doing Vince's dunks now. So that will forever be etched in my memory, that night when Vince won that slam dunk contest.
You know, and I'm going to give you a quick one before we close out here. I did not get dunked on when I played with Vince Carter on his team in a little media charity pickup game way back in the day. I don't know what the hell business I had being on the floor with Vince Carter, but he played and we were, and I don't believe you were there that day, and I have no idea why, because you've got a hell of a lot more game than I do. But it was at the practice facility at Scotiabank Arena, then Air Canada Center, up on the third floor outside, you know, section 318, 317. So I can now say that I have hooped alongside a Hall of Famer. So again, congratulations to Vince Carter. Thanks to producer Austin Mackey. For Paul Jones, I'm Eric Smith. Again, folks, make sure you subscribe to Smith & Jones wherever you get your podcast, Google, Apple, Spotify, or otherwise. Download, subscribe, rate, review, and please share this episode as well, as we looked back on the Hall of Fame career of Vince Carter on Smith & Jones.